show comes
okay.
on.
Okay. Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to the Pinkney to Pinkney Show. I am Reverend Edward Pinkney. And we're going to listen to a little Martin Luther King, and then we'll be right back with you.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state in every city. We will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show, and you're listening to the Reverend Edward Pinckney, the first pastor in the whole, in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. That's in modern day history. I tell you, I'm excited, and I'm also very, very excited about the show. I got a letter from the Internal Revenue Service this week, and it tells me that we are doing things. Anytime they send a nice guy like me a letter like this, I'm overly impressed, and I will turn it over to my attorneys. I'll let them deal with it. But also, I want to get this in. Our boycott, our international boycott of Whirlpool products are still in existence. We are still boycotting all the Whirlpool products. That's on the international level and the national level and the local level. We want people not to buy Whirlpool products. And we are doing a tremendous job. It's been going on for a year or so now, and we have continued to pound on them. But here in the city of Benton Harbor, we had another excellent week at the courthouse. We had 17 cases dismissed. I'm jumping up and down. I'm excited. That means 17 brothers and sisters would not be entering the jail system. That's what it means. I'm also working on two murder cases, and we went out and hired a private investigator to make sure that we get the information out there. But on that note, let me bring in my brother, my hero, my friend, Larry Pinckney. Larry Pinckney, are you there?
I am, my brother. You are also my brother, my comrade, my hero, and my friend, and I'm glad to hear your voice.
Hey, I tell you, it's been such a tremendous week, and I'm so excited about the show. And I tell you, Larry, why don't you tell the people just a little bit about yourself? Then we'll bring on Khalil and let her say what she has to say. All right? Can we do that?
I'll be very quick. All right.
Okay. Can you introduce her?
All right. My background is very, very, very succinct. I'm a veteran of the Black Panther Party, and I currently write for the Black Commentator, www.blackcommentator.com. I'm the only quote-unquote American who's ever successfully self-authored a case, taking it to the United Nations and won. And I continue to fight, as we should all continue to fight and struggle today for justice and human rights. That's it in a nutshell. I want to go right ahead, if it's all right with you, my good brother, and introduce our wonderful comrade sister, our princess, Kilu Nyasha, because we will be discussing today more political prisoners, and Kilu will tell you all about that. Last week, the political prisoner that we discussed was Suniata Akoli. This week we will be discussing Herman Bell and Jaleel Matakim, as well as probably the San Francisco 8, etc. And I'm going to just stop it right there and just say that Sister Kilu Nyasha, my comrade, our comrade, wonderful sister, is a sterling writer. She's a broadcast journalist. She is a veteran of the Black Panther Party. She is a revolutionary, and we love her. Kilu.
Larry, it's so good to be with you and Reverend Pinckney again this Sunday. It's just a very honored privilege to be able to reach your audience with the truth about what's going on among our political prisoners. And I will just go right ahead and tell you about Anthony Bottom, now known as Jaleel Muntakim and Herman Bell, who were originally incarcerated as part of the a group of prisoners known as the New York Three. However, after the first trial for which they were convicted of, they were tried for, rather, for the murder of two police officers in New York City in May of 1971. In May of 1971. And the first trial ended in a hung jury, most voting for acquittal. The second trial, unfortunately, in which the prosecutors brought in a lot of false evidence and covered up other evidence and just a lot of misconduct on the part of the prosecutors, they were convicted and sentenced to 25 to life. They have done amazing things while in prison, however. Both have gotten degrees, bachelor's and master's degrees, and they have now served, has served 40 years. Herman has served 38 years. And in 2007, they, along with six other elders, were brought up on charges of an August 1971 police killing in San Francisco. A police officer was killed in the Ingleside Police Station in August of 1971, allegedly in retaliation for the assassination of George Jackson. And the case was first thrown out of court in 1975 after several of the people brought up on charges, including one of the San Francisco Eight Taylor. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
That's all right.
Go ahead. Take your time.
They were the charges were against. The case was thrown out of court because the three prisoners were tortured in New Orleans after capture, and one of whom was Reuben Scott, who Harold Taylor, and one of the I couldn't think of his first name, because I had Hank in my mind, and it's Hank Jones and Harold Taylor, but in that case, Harold Taylor and as well as John Bowman, who would have made it the New York, the San Francisco Nine, but he died of cancer before the trial began. And I knew John Bowman, JB we called him, and he was just a beautiful brother, a great loss to our movement. In any case, Reuben Scott is also being used allegedly to testify again against the only remaining litigant, defendant to be litigated, Francisco Torres, we call him Cisco, in the 8 case. However, getting back to the New York 3 case, Reuben Scott had been tortured in New Orleans also in 73, and he was used by the prosecution against Herman and Jaleel in the New York 3 case to win conviction. In fact, he had gone to the judge in that case and told the judge of the police misconduct of how he had been tortured using electric cattle prods to the genitals and, you know, the waterboarding, the whole nine yards had been used against him. And the judge just ignored him and sent him back to the same police, you know, and ignored his plea for, you know, that he had lied on, you know, because of the under oath because of these of this torture. So there was not only prosecution misconduct, there was judicial misconduct on the part of the judge in that case. But nevertheless, they were convicted and were doing time. So fast forward to their being held here in San Francisco for 2 years, at which point I got to meet them both. I had been corresponding with both of them for many, many years. But I did get to meet with them here by visiting them at the county jail. They're two incredible brothers. I mean, you know, they have histories of great service to the people outside the walls and inside, behind the walls. Not only did they get degrees there, but they've been known to be as writers, as to provide skilled programs for inmates, to provide mentoring and tutoring to other prisoners. Jaleel is a published poet and essayist. He was pictured in Ebony Magazine a while ago when he was permitted a family visit with his granddaughter. He's a grandfather. He's just an amazing human being. I mean, he's done so much. The two of them, initiated by Herman Bell, started a Victory Gardens behind the walls in which they had some Maine activists growing organic produce to be distributed to urban communities, like Harlem and Bed-Stuy in the city. So they've never stopped trying to serve the people, you know. They've never stopped being Panthers, so to speak. And they're still in trouble. Now, more recently, both Jaleel and Herman Bell, along with David Gilbert, Sekou Odinga, and one or two others whose name escaped me at the moment, petitioned Governor Patterson to grant them clemency as he left office. And, of course, that decision came down on December 31st, and, of course, it was in the negative. They were not granted clemency, not a big surprise. But the case of the San Francisco 8 continues, and, in fact, I spoke with Cisco this morning in preparing to come on the air, and he's out of New York, and he will be coming back to San Francisco in March for a March 2nd hearing. In this case, he's the only, as I said earlier, and the only defendant to continue to be prosecuted. In this next hearing, we'll deal with the statements printed in the local newspaper, the San Francisco Chronicle, in the wake of Marilyn Buck's death, in which this former police officer, I think he was a police officer or an FBI agent, one or the other, stated that Marilyn was seen at the Angleside police station, and he had wiretap logs to prove it, that she had been there or something like that. And, of course, the prosecutors in the 8 case have all along claimed that there are no wiretap logs. And so they're going to litigate this, bring this up in court on the 2nd, and see whether the state winds up with egg on its face. Because we certainly know that we were wiretapped. In fact, I myself was part of a wiretap lawsuit in New Haven, where the journalist called New Haven Wiretap City. And since I worked for both Huey and Bobby's lawyer, Charles Gary, in that case, the Bobby Seale, Erica Huggins, Lonnie McLucas trials, and I was wiretapped both at my home and in the office, and of course the Panther office. So. I was one of their stronger plaintiffs, and that case was settled out of court. The city for over $1 million, close to $2 million, and then there were two other cases, one against the Southern New England Telephone Company and one against the chief of New Haven Police and his brother. And so some of us got some money out of that case. So we know perfectly well and have plenty of documentation to the fact that they were wiretapping, as that case was won and settled out of court. So this case will be is ongoing, and I also, just as an aside, the San Francisco supervisors are suing the state for reimbursement of the $2 million they've had to spend on this ridiculous case to date. It's outrageous this is a 40-year-old, literally a 40-year-old case. And they were struggling to put six elders back in prison, two remain in prison. But one was immediately exonerated, Richard O'Neill. They had nothing on him. And the five others had all the four others had all the charges dropped. So,
can I just ask you something, sister?
Sure.
What you're saying, my sister, is that the state, i.e., when I say state, I'm talking about the federal government and, of course, the states working with the federal government,
state
is continuing. They're continuing to use trumped up evidence, fabricated evidence against these political prisoners. They're continuing to ignore, particularly in the case of Francisco, Brother Cisco Torres, in the case of San Francisco 8, as an example, that horrible torture, physical and psychological torture, am I correct in saying that, that was actually used against these brothers?
Well, yeah, not all of them. The Harold Taylor, one of the defendants in this case, John Bowman, who would have been had he not died prematurely, and Reuben Scott, who is apparently about to turn state's evidence behind the torture in New Orleans. Well, when the case was brought in San Francisco in 1975, the judge threw it out based on evidence gleaned from torture. And there's a video that Freedom Archives put out titled Legacy of Torture. And if you go to freedomarchives.org on the internet, you can find it and purchase it. It's an excellent video that simulates the torture and interviews all of these prisoners. Even John Bowman, before he died, is interviewed along with one of the lawyers who has been handling the case, Sophia Elijah. And Harold Taylor is interviewed, who was actually tortured, and he describes what happened to him in detail. And it's very similar to what happened to the prisoners in Abu Ghraib.
It was very, very nasty.
So, so this it was thrown out, and then they had the audacity to bring it up again. You see, but I think that they didn't anticipate the level of support that these brothers got. You know, people were outraged that they would, I mean, these are brothers who were living, you know, normal lives, productive lives, raising their families, you know, no problems, and they're trying to scoop them up and destroy their families, basically, and throw them in jail for the rest of their lives. I mean, Hank is the eldest, and I think he's 74 or 75 years old now. It doesn't make sense. And Jaleel and Herman, they should have been paroled a long time ago. These are brothers. Not only are they innocent, but they are the best of our kind. I can't emphasize that enough. I mean, we need these brothers out here mentoring our young people. And, I mean, these are brothers who, you know, have been given rewards, particularly Jaleel, has been rewarded for being a peacemaker and, you know, managing to settle disputes and riots and, you know, calm the scenes in prison. I mean, these are brothers who have good sense and, you know, they're very conscious. They have computer skills. They've both gotten degrees, you know, bachelor's and master's degrees, because, you know, in New York, of course, they were able to take advantage of the educational opportunities that, you know, were fought for and won, actually, in New York State. So it just makes no sense at all to continue to try to prosecute these brothers and spend all this money trying to put people in jail who are no threat whatsoever to society.
But, Mr. Kilu,
I realize that this is an effort to send a message to young people. Don't even think about standing up and resisting oppression, resisting fascism.
Right. That's you must be reading my mind, because I was just going to ask you to go there, and you went there. So the point being that these are elders from our community, and we're talking about many, many elders who are political prisoners, and they are continuing to provide an example, but it's an example that our youth are unable to avail themselves of, because they're cut off from these brothers and sisters, I might add. You mentioned Marilyn Buck, who was in her own right a wonderful warrior and who recently made her transition. She passed on. But I would ask you this, if I may, Comrade Sister Kilu, would you sort of segue, if you will, with based on the information that you've given us about the San Francisco 8, about Jaleel, about Herman Bell, et cetera, would you segue into what does that mean for us, those of us who are not necessarily inside or behind the prison walls, even though we are in prison in a sense? What does that mean? What should we be doing?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to stay in touch with our prisoners. I don't know too many people that don't know somebody in prison. I mean, you know, I have a daughter and a nephew in prison. I mean, I'm not ashamed to say it, because in both cases it's drug related. We know that an overwhelming majority of prisoners are in prison because of drugs. Now,
mm-hmm.
who are the biggest drug pushers in the world? Afghanistan
mm-hmm.
produces 90% of the world's heroin. Guess what? You know, I mean, we have to stop. We have to take the blinkers off, open our eyes, and see what's going on. They are making tons of money off of drugs, prescription
wow.
drugs, illegal drugs, any kind of drugs that you name it, quasi-legal drugs like marijuana, whatever. They are making tons of money off of drugs. And who are they? They have
the government.
The money gets laundered. Okay, you hear about money being laundered in Swiss banks and this bank and that bank. Well, why is it being laundered? It's being cleaned up because it's got the stench of drugs all over it.
Mm.
The bottom line is this country is over its head in drug trafficking,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
drug importation.
Kilo, let me ask you one quick question. When do Herman Bell come up? For a parole hearing?
I think they just had a parole hearing, and
uh-huh.
they were denied, and they were the last attempt was to get Patterson on his way out to grant clemency, and of course he did not.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure when the next parole hearing will be, but in any event, I want to give addresses to both of them so that you can write to them and at least keep them company and keep them encouraged and help them continue to stay strong, you know.
Yes. And you know Herman Bell's birthday is January the 14th.
And, you know, that's the same day, Claude was telling me that this morning when I talked
mm-hmm.
to him. And it's the same date as Sundiata Okoli's, ironically.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah,
same
they went
identical
on the same
date.
Day, a day before Martin Luther King's birthday, too. So they're in good company.
Very
yeah,
much so.
Yeah, it would
so.
Be great if you could send a... Can I give the addresses?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, you'd have to use their slave names. Anthony Bottom, 77... That's Jaleel. 77A as an apple. 4283. That's 77A, 4283. Box 618, Box 618, 136 State Street, Auburn, A-U-B-U-R-N, Auburn, New York, 13021. 136 State Street, Auburn, New York, 13021. Then Herman Bell, 79C, as in cat, 79C0262. 0262 Sullivan CF PO Box 116 PO Box 116 Fallsburg FALSBURG Fallsburg New York 12733 That's zip 12733 And I'm sure they would love to hear from you, and those brothers can receive money orders directly, unlike Sundiata, who has to go through another process. But
I'm planning on writing Herman Bell myself. I'm going to write him and also wish him a happy birthday.
Oh, yes, that would be great.
I'm going to do that this week.
Do I have enough time to inject one more thing?
Yes, you do. Go right ahead.
Okay. Last week, if you recall, I kept trying to remember because I'm advocating two approaches to our political prisoners and our prisoners in general. And one is the short-term approach, and that is amnesty for prisoners who have already done 25 years. And that would scoop up all of our political prisoners because they've all done more than 25 years, some as many as 45 and 46. Okay? So amnesty for all prisoners who have done 25 years or more, that's one campaign I'd like to see get going. The second is to abolish the prison system per se. And I think that is the key to dismantling this prison system is the key to a new justice system that would be one of strictly rehabilitation. So if you'll recall last week, I couldn't remember the Declaration of Independence quote.
Yes. Yes.
That gives us the right to do this. So I found it. And there's only one thing wrong with this thing that really bugs me, and that is that it's the reference is only to men. So if you'll just add women to men, I'll read it. And it shouldn't take too long.
Go right ahead.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men and women, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. I'll say that again. Deriving their just powers, powers, the power of the people, is derived, right? The government should derive their power from the people, right?
Right, absolutely, absolutely.
The governed, right? Okay,
right.
So then it goes on to say that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind or humankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism or tyranny, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security.
Absolutely.
There it is.
Absolutely.
That's beautiful.
There it is. It is our not only our right, it's our duty, to throw off this tyranny and to pursue a new form of government, a new that ensures that that the government derives their power from the people.
Absolutely.
Right.
And on that note, Kilu, we got to have our Lynn Stewart moment. Ralph, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening and I'm learning and I'm loving all of this information that's brought up that we should know about. And my question comes to, why do we not know about all of our political prisoners? When I say we, the people whose interest is best served by knowing our political prisoners, that is our community. Why do we not know? Because in America, it is not about money. For in 1995, the three of us, Lynn Stewart, Betty Davis, and myself, took our life savings to go into commercial radio because we felt that if the people understood, if they had the information, they would act properly. So we bought a time on a radio, $1,400 an hour on commercial radio, WWRL New York. And in 6 months, we went to the number one media, black media. That is the media that our people listen to. We were number one. And guess what happened? We introduced, the next program was going to be on our political prisoners. And they shut us down. Money could not buy time to give our information to our community. So we have to understand that. What happens? We know it. I listened to Kilu talking about, you know, our right to change this government. But we have no institution to change the government with, because most of us are involved in churches, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, and as Larry Pinkney says, the Republicrats. This is who we spend our money and energy into, the Republicrats. None of them represent us. The churches do not represent us. They represent us after we're dead, and we're trying to talk about representing us while we're here. And now I'll get to Lynn Stewart. I believe it was 2002 out in San Francisco when she was asked to speak on the coming of the police state. And when she got there, she says, what do you mean the coming of the police state? There are people within our society who are very familiar with the police state. As Larry says, the blacks, Latinos, the yellow, poor, everybody has known the coming of the police state is here. What are we going to do to get rid of the police state? And I just listened to the names. It just breaks my heart. For 40 years fighting to do something to alleviate the pain of our community and of our people sitting in prison, but we still don't go to institutions. We have not developed an institution that can make this possible. And I'm going to tell truth, throw out names, because we have names of people who are supposedly representing us. And it goes from the top down, Obama down in the Democratic Party. They have never represented our interests. They represent the interests of a few people willing to sell our interests to the Democratic Party. So we must remember, and on the local level, who is it on your local level that doesn't represent you? Like, we have Bob Law in the media. We have Gil Noble in the media. These people do not represent our interests. They will produce a story that does not change anything. Oh, woe is me. I don't want woe is me. What we're going to do is the messages I want, and they will not have anybody on their, you know, program to talk about what we're going to do. So we must understand that until we develop institutions, and I put in my own words, I'm sick and tired of watching people vote for people who are going to sell them out. Not only sell them out, but sell them out cheaply. And I say we're guilty of that. We're guilty of that. We are.
Well, Ralph, we got to step forward. That's what we have to do.
Yeah,
we have
to
show these people.
Ralph,
let me say this to you. How is Lynn Stewart doing? Talk to me about her.
Okay, I visited Lynn Stewart last week, and it was a wonderful visit for the holidays, and I didn't have my pass. Can you imagine that? I've been visiting her for a year in federal prison, and so they switch her from MCC in New York to Carswell in Fort Worth, Texas. Now, let me tell you, we begged and we wrote letters. We said, please ship Lynn to her federal prison close to her attorneys and people who care about her, and that would be in Connecticut, which was like an hour and a half ride on the train, an hour in the car to Connecticut, where her lawyers could visit her, where her family could visit her. But they shipped her to Fort Worth, Texas, Carswell, where Marilyn Buck, you had just spoken of, was imprisoned. And Lynn says when she got there, many of the people there knew about Marilyn Buck. So I went there without a pass to go. I just said, hey, she's there. She needs to see somebody she knows. And Lynn said, she says, I have faith. I'm going to talk to the people, the counselors inside, and you come to the gate. You talk to the people out there and see if we can get a visit. So for the holidays, for the New Year's holidays, I was out in Fort Worth, Texas, and it was 3.5 hours waiting out. It started at 63 degrees, and 3.5 hours it went to 40 degrees at a high wind. I was dying out there, but I got in. But I must say, even though we have a pernicious, outrageous prison system, there are people within the prison system of goodwill. And when the people in the prison system got a hint of who Lynn Stewart was, and black and Chicano and whites who understood who she was and what she represented, made sure that I got in. And so I was in Friday. I was there at 8 in the morning, and I stayed outside till 11:30, and I visited till 2, and then Saturday from 9 to 2, and then Sunday from 9 to 2, and then Monday from 5 to 9 p.m., I visited with Lynn Stewart, and let me give you her address. And she talked about the wonderful letters of the people who had written to her and the photographs they sent, and she says, it picks her up. It really picks her up. So it's Lynn Stewart, Federal Medical Center, Carswell. Federal Medical Center, Carswell. Carswell. 53504-054. Unit 2N. P.O. Box 27137. Fort Worth, Texas. 76127. And the beauty of this, writing to her, people write in and say, listen, Lynn, we have to get you out of prison because you've got more work to do. The wonderful work that you have done. And when I was there, can you imagine when I was down in Fort Worth, Texas, you know, a correction officer said, what is all of this about Lynn Stewart? You know, this little old white lady with gray hair and takes small steps. And he says, who is she? What are these people talking about? And I says, well, do you remember the case of Larry Davis in New York? And she says, yeah, you mean the dude that elude. You know, he shot 6 cops in self-defense. And Lynn Stewart was the attorney who got him. And she says, that's who she is. She says, come with me. Get in my car. I'm going to get you in to see Lynn Stewart. So this is one of the moments that I always remember. You know, you're working to get something done, and then people realize who Lynn is. And when you begin to talk, I says, not only famous cases, and you were talking about, Clay Lou was talking about, Kilo was talking about drugs and how nonsense that was. Well, Lynn Stewart did so many minor drug cases, the people who you will never know. And she says, because these are economic crimes, they hurt no one. This is to buy bread. This is to pay the rent. And in a society that gives you so much need to overlook, somebody has to defend them. And let us remember the basics. America, the basics here, America is a criminal enterprise. And I'm going to start with genocide. You know that, free land. Kill all the Indians and it's free. Kill anybody on that land and it's yours. Then you have a slave to work it free. Then you have capitalism with the rich taking everything from the poor, oppressing them before unions. A criminal enterprise. And how dare they come along and say somebody can be created or committed a crime to live. This is genocide, oppression, slavery of the worst kind. And we're just trying to get along in it. But now that we're here, the world has grown smaller. We must begin to develop institutions. We must begin to support people who support us. We don't want to oppress anyone. We want to end oppression. And organizations that fight to end oppression must be supported. And I'm going to be quick. I'm going to jump. Cynthia McKinney, the only representative in government, in our government, who was elected, who went to see our political prisoners. And we didn't vote for her. We got snookered. We went in. We were our just emotions to be a part of this society were pimped by the pimp, Mr. Obama. And I have to say that. You know, if I can't tell the truth, what good am I? And if anybody wants to look at the record, and I'm seeing Larry, Glenn Ford, so many others have written the record, they can say it far better than I. We must learn to support people who support us. Lynn Stewart supported us for 45 years, and I've been talking on this program, talking about what she did in the beginning of the Path to program. And I say around the country, well, how can we participate? And I like what you have done, Reverend Pinckney, to make this program a program of real things instead of words. So we must stop Mr. Obama from destroying our major institution, a major institution that we never made ours, and that is the public schools. We must stop privatization. We must stop the charter schools in any neighborhood you are, wherever you are, saying no to that. We're not going to turn our children over to the corporations, you know, go from the police and from the state to the corporations. Our children must work and be educated on their own behalf, not to serve other institutions that oppress us. So I thank everyone. And Lynn Stewart says she spends her days, what keeps her alive is reading her letters and answering her letters. And Lynn's first political education was over the community control of education, that which the white community has enjoyed. She didn't know there was anything else until she got to Harlem, when she saw that everybody, you know, it was the pig pen. It was the trough of every political organization other than black people. And when she recognized that, an intellectual, a hardworking person, an activist who got her first stint into activism supporting the migrant workers, the Mexican workers out in Michigan. So, and she says, hey, these people have no interest in supporting these children. And she couldn't understand it. It was children that they denied rights to. They denied food to. They denied any type of education to. And she says, hey, this America that I thought was a little different than that. My country, tis of thee, sweet land of liberty. And she says, what's going on? And when she got to Harlem, where she was born not 5 miles from, and I say this over and over again, she was a valedictorian of every class she was ever in. She's a bright little penny. And she says, how come I don't know about this? If they presented it, I learned it. And then she began to fight to change it. And that's when her life changed. And one of the ends of all of our conversations, and when she says, well, she says, 45 years ago, when we looked at this situation, I'm a black guy, you know, like 5 years older. I've been around in unions in Western Pennsylvania, et cetera. My father was an organizer. And then when I understood what it was, and I always laugh and say, well, I went to the white public schools in Pittsburgh and surrounding areas, and I went to Duquesne University or Franciscan University, and I went to the University of Pittsburgh, and I went to Carnegie Mellon. Then when I went to jail, I got educated, Rikers Island. This was my education. I walked in there and said, whoa, you know, what America am I talking about? So, you know, it's a revelation that I had, and she got a revelation. We all get revelations. And Reverend Pinckney, you're trying to give us revelations. Larry Pinckney, you're writing constantly to try to give us, try to wake us up. And we all have it because then once we get it, we have to take advantage of it. So, Reverend, I look forward, you know, like I'm following up on your whirlpool and all of the discussions you had. We must fight these people. We must teach them that we have the economic power that we have left after they've taken our farms in the South, after they've taken our homes in the North, after they've denied us voting rights throughout the country. Now that we're fighting to get these things, they must become real. They must become a part of an institution that serves us. A political prisoner is any child who ends up in prison because they could not get a job due to miseducation. Not lack of education, miseducation. We have to fight these things step at a time, but we must know what the end game is. Thank you so much, Reverend. I'm continuing, and we talk over, you know, the weekend when we're not on the radio with the people. Yeah, we're going to fight this, you know, tooth and nail. We have to have our own activity. We have to stop Whirlpool. And we have to send our letters to Lynn Stewart, Federal Medical Center, Carswell, 53504-054, Unit 2N, P.O. Box 27137, Fort Worth, Texas. Get this, 76127. And I must say, for all of our political prisoners, I have a calendar up in front. When I step into the house every day, I look at the calendar of our political prisoners, And if I'm down, it breaks my heart. But I have to keep myself up with the belief that we're going to get them out. So many names that we do not know and letters that people write to me simply because I'm associated with Lynn Stewart and say, what can you do? So my message to everybody, when you write to Lynn Stewart, say, we got to get you out because you have unfinished work to do out here, given your expertise to our political prisoners who need it. And Jill Elijah, you know, like so many people who have fought so many years to help. These names must be out there. We must talk about them. We must talk to them. But then the prison organizations, the prison strife, our brothers are suffering in prison after they did that strike down in Georgia. We must wake our people up. We must go to the churches. And I will finish that with Lynn Stewart. I told her the reason why you're in jail and they had to put you in quick because you were going to the black churches. You were making phone calls on your bug telephone. We have to make the churches stand up for our people. Jesus died a long time ago, and we stand up for him. Let's stand up for the other people, regardless of the religion, the people who...
Ralph, you know, I have to say you are right on point with that because we got to make these churches stand up. I know every once in a while I run into a minister, and the first word he said, Reverend Pinckney, I don't agree with everything you doing, but... So my word to him is very, very simple. Which of my good works do you stone me for? And I tell them that because I know that they're not out here doing anything. So we have to get together and make these churches accountable. You know, and that's one of the things that I do personally. I'm probably the most hated man there is in the city of Benton Harbor when it comes to minister because I do not hold these ministers up. I tell them just like it is. I mean, if you're not doing nothing, and I remember when I first went to prison, and I was telling, you know, for quoting that scripture, if you didn't want to stand up for me, you could have stood up for God's word because I was right on point. I did not threaten anybody. It was simply a scripture. You know, if you do not, that's the whole thing. It's obvious you're doing something wrong. But
excuse me for laughing because when I first heard you say that.
I believe you, I understand because we have to attack these churches on a level that they understand that we're for real about what we're doing.
Right on.
Thing, either you with me or you're against me. And I
tell
you this much, we must be doing something really good. Because, like I said, I have a letter from the Internal Revenue Service knowing that I know I'm already covered, but they do that to intimidate you. See what you're going
right.
to say. I care less about a letter from them. If I could just burn it right outside in front of their faces, I'd be happy.
That's an idea, Reverend.
That's how I feel. You know, that's how I feel about them.
I want to be with you when you burn it in front of the Internal Revenue. Because
absolutely.
That shows you're doing something right. So you
absolutely.
Just
so what we want to do, we want to keep everything, these lines open, so we can, see, we have to stop people from going to jail.
Right.
We got three murder cases that I'm working on. And I believe that we're going to win two of them.
I
want to
come out
our own
you.
Investigator. And I tell you this, is for the people all around the world. Political prisoners, every day we're going to have a new one. So
right.
we got to get out here and do what we're supposed to do.
Right
we
up.
Don't come together. And my
right
favorite
up.
Word, we got to stick and move. We got to stick
yes,
them,
right.
then move.
Wonderful.
And keep moving.
I'm with you.
Yeah. But
I'm
look,
with
before
you.
Before we only got about 6 minutes left, I just want to make some announcements about Herman Bailey having his birthday January the 14th. And then you got William Philip Africa. His birthday was January the 1st. Then you got Oscar Lopez Rivera. His birthday was January the 6th. Then you got Jonathan Paul. His birthday is January 31st. So what we want to do, we want to make sure that people understand. And we're going to be honoring these political prisoners. Every chance we get, we're going to talk about it. And Kilu, I would love for you to be with us because I know that you know most of them, that you have came in contact with most of them. You and Larry, y'all doing a tremendous job. And the rating is going out the roof. I tell you, and I appreciate that. But on that note, I'm going to shut my mouth. And Larry, I'm going to start with you. Then I'm going to go with Ralph. And Kilu, you handle the end. Let's go.
All right. Well, I want to say to our listening audience, all power to the people. Thank you very much for tuning in to the Pinckney to Pinckney program. Special regards to, of course, to Sister Kilu, as always. This is a struggle of all oppressed people. We have a duty and a right and a duty, as Sister Kilu pointed out, to take the yoke off of our neck. The yoke of a government, a corporate government that does not, I repeat, does not represent the interests of black, white, brown, red, and yellow everyday people, okay? So with that, I'm simply going to say, let us continue. Remember that song, if there's one thing we did right was the day we started to fight, all
that's
power
it
to the people.
All right, right. Ralph.
Well, Larry, I was going to, Larry Pinckney, I was going to come out see you, but I've been looking at your weather map out there in Minneapolis. I'm going to skip over you, and then maybe I can get up to see Reverend Pinckney, even
it's
in Michigan. It's not quite that bad. But just remember, you know, like our love and our concern stretches beyond the weather. It stretches beyond, you know, continent, stretches beyond distance. And I just say, you know, Lynn Stewart, you all know her name, Federal Medical Center. 53504-054, Unit 2N, P.O. Box 27137, Fort Worth, Texas, 76127. And we are together. I feel it. We are all together. The names that we have mentioned, all of us, our hearts, there's a spirit out there that we're touching each other. Thank you, and let us continue to stretch, touch each other, and hug each other, embrace our issue. Thank you.
Kilu.
Yes. First, I want to thank you, Reverend Pinckney and Larry Pinckney, both of you, for having me on your show. And I want to send a message to your listeners that to have faith in the people, that we can win, but we shouldn't fight any battles that we can't win. And one of the battles that we keep fighting and we know we can't win in is this electoral arena. They've got it fixed so that we can't win. And I
right
think
on.
We stop, you know, the definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results.
Right.
The corporations have that arena sewed up. It's a big money game, and we can't afford it. So I think what we can do is follow the example of the Haitian people who have boycotted elections, and people all over the world have figured out that boycotting elections is a way to send a strong message to this electoral fraud that we've been seeing all over the globe. And what do we do in the meantime? We stop supporting their candidates, their BS, and we begin to build a movement to
right
free
on.
Our people, to abolish the prison system, and to abolish this system per se, and institute a government that really provide is of, by, and for the people and serves the people. And that means that when we pay taxes, our tax dollars come back to us in the form of services, medical care, education, child care, decent housing, all of the basic human needs that we should have organized to benefit our communities. So all power to the people. And dare to struggle, dare to win.
Kilu,
right,
that was beautiful. Hey, I would like for you to send me something about abolishing the prison system so I can put it on my blog.
Well, it's already in the San Francisco Bayview. It's called Abolition Key to New Justice System. It's an article that's both on my blog and in the current issue of the San Francisco Bayview newspaper.
Okay.
And that's online and available also.
Very good. Well, what I'm going to do, and whenever you want to, you can send me something, and I'll put it on the blob. That, you know, we got a lot of people reading my blob. They're enjoying it because they don't know what I might say next. So
right.
it gives them the excitement of seeing what Pinckney has to say. But
okay,
let me say
this to you. I never carbon copy anything because my you know, steal this is my attitude. Okay.
Okay.
I educate to liberate, and I believe firmly that education should be free to the people. So I practice.
Yes.
So anytime you see my byline on something, you can pick it up and fly with it.
All right. I love it. And look, I want to let you know that we truly, truly enjoy you. And I don't even have to tell you how much we love you. And I tell you, I'm going to use the term Conrad if it's okay with Larry, because I want to make sure that I feel like we're all connected now. I feel so comfortable having you around, and I truly enjoy you. I respect you, and I just wish there was more women like you. You know, and I want you to know I appreciate you, and you know, I would love, you know, maybe you and my wife get a chance to talk, because she's a fighter too. She fights from her heart.
I would love to meet her.
And she's a real soldier, and you know, and the fight continues with her, and that's what I want to teach. But before we close out, I just want to say a little bit about Whirlpool so people can understand that this fight is going to continue. And I want people to know that Whirlpool do not intimidate me. I don't care what the Internal Revenue say. I don't care what nobody say. If it's a fight, if it's a fist fight, I'm going to be right in the middle. If it's a gun fight, I'm going to be right in the middle.
Right on.
So I want them to know where I stand, because I am not going to let them continue to oppress my people and walk around here with a smile on their face thinking that we're not about anything. I'm embarrassed the way they have mistreated my people here, and I have not been able to do the things that need to be done to make sure it never happens again. And I'm just, but Whirlpool, the boycott is still on. For Whirlpool, we got to make sure that we don't buy their product. And that's my international people, my national people, my local people. We are not buying Whirlpool products. We had them, and somehow we got too relaxed, and now they're back on the road. They were just one step from being junk stock, and we blew it, but we're still at it. But on that note, I'm going to have to say good night. We have just ran out of time.
Good night. Love you all.
I tell you, love y'all. Love y'all. And listen, let's stay focused and get this job done. We can do it. Talk to you later.
Bye. All right. Take care, y'all. Love you.
I will. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.